All right, the recorder is on.
All right, well, let's get the meeting going. And tonight's May 23rd meeting of the City of North Bend Planning Commission, 7 o'clock. We'll start with roll call. I'll go ahead and start. Chair Commissioner Tao.
Commissioner Greenberg.
Commissioner Torgerson.
Commissioner McFarland.
Commissioner Colon.
Commissioner Bovers.
And staff.
City Attorney Eileen Kiefer.
And Senior Planner Mike McCarty.
Awesome. I'd like to formally welcome our new commissioners, Susan and Heather. Congratulations on your appointment and welcome to the commission. Look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
I second that. Thank you.
Maybe just as a suggestion, if we could go around to introduce ourselves, kind of just a very brief thing about what we do, just for the sake of kind of knowing a little
bit
about backgrounds.
Sure. James, you want to start? We'll go in reverse order this time.
Sure. James Bovers, live in the Valley, sort of in the Valley, for about coming up on 10 years. Been on the commission for about a year now.
I'm Heather. I've lived in the Valley for about 21 years, and I've been on the commission for like a day.
Rob McFarland. I've been here for pushing 23 years, I guess, something like that. Been on the Planning Commission. This is my 11th year. Before that, Parks. Before that, Meadowbrook Foundation, and lots of other things in between. Business consultant, mostly in real estate.
I'm Susan Torgerson. My family's been here forever. I've lived here several times throughout my tenure. I've been here. I went to second grade at the, where the library is now, I went to second grade at that old building.
Oh,
it was really
yeah.
cool. I love that building. And then I've been here like every summer because my grandparents were here. And I moved here. I moved back in here about 1997. So I consider this hometown.
Awesome.
Well, Scott Greenberg, my wife and I, my wife Monica and I have lived here for about 4 years. We built a winery next to our house, Conversion Zone Cellars.
What's
and
it called?
Conversion Zone Cellars started in Woodinville, and we used to live up in the Redmond area. While I started that, and I retired from my day job about a year ago, I was the Development Services Director for the City of Mercer Island and Community Development Director for Burien. We know a lot of the same people, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And Dr. Mike Kenyon was, he and I worked very closely on the Westmark case in Burien, the
wonderful.
Famous Westmark case.
So he was the city attorney.
He probably was.
And I had a 40-year career as a city planner. And actually sat in Mike's chair with many other commissions as staffed planning commissions preparing the packets and wondering why the commissioners weren't doing what I asked them to do.
And so are you here to just get back at it?
I've been nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's it.
And I'm Gary Tao. I've been on the commission for a year as well, joined with the same time as James and Scott. My wife and I have lived here, it will be 6 years in September. Kind of been in the area most of our lives. I retired from Boeing, 20 plus year career at Boeing last summer. I've also spent a couple of terms as an elected city council member in the city of Des Moines. So I've really enjoyed my time here on the commission and learned a lot, and it's just great to work with everybody and get more involved in the community here. Mm-hmm. All right.
And Mike McCarty again. I've been in the Valley, I was just thinking about that, almost 20 years now my wife and I moved here, and been at the City of North Bend for about 11 years now. Before that, I was a planner for the City of Snoqualmie, battling Rob when he was with Quadrant developing Snoqualmie Ridge.
We had many good times together.
Yep.
We used to design parks and trails together.
And this is Eileen Kiefer, the city attorney. I've only lived in the area for about 2 years now, two and a half years now, but I got here as fast as I could. As Rob knows and Mike knows, I am a transplant. I had a law practice in Texas for about 10 years, so but representing cities. So it's kind of fun to come across the country, see what's different, what's the same. But I always have good clients, so I really enjoy it.
Awesome. Good to meet everybody.
I forgot to mention student organizing. I also ran my own business for like 7 to 10 years, a small golf cart business. So I'm not really running it because I'm taking care of my dad because he needs some extra help. But so my background would be small business.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a topic that we consider quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Good perspective to have. Before we get into the agenda, I probably should have asked for a motion to excuse Mary since she's out sick tonight. Is there a motion to excuse? Move. Second. It's been moved and seconded. All of those in favor of excusing Mary from today's meeting for illness, raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Hope she feels better soon. Next is approval of tonight's agenda. So for our new commissioners, we'll look for a formal motion and second to approve the items that are on agenda tonight. We'll vote on that. That becomes the agenda that we'll follow for the rest of the meeting. And then we'll take the same step as we get to the next agenda item, which will be approval of the meeting minutes from last time. So is there a motion to...
I move we approve the agenda with the amendment that number 6 be moved to number 5.
Is there any discussion?
We'll take discussion after motion's been made and seconded.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. Been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
If he's not here, is this person supposed to be here?
Well, I think that was the rationale, Mike, that you thought maybe reversing the order.
If he's here.
If he's here.
Doesn't look like he's here.
So we might want to just stick with the original agenda.
So I will withdraw my motion.
Okay.
Second.
Second's okay with that? All right. So with that, is there a motion to approve tonight's agenda?
So moved.
Moved.
Seconded.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None. Motion carries. Next item is approval of the meeting minutes from our May 9th Planning Commission meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion?
I wasn't here, so I'll recuse myself.
Okay. Commissioner Bovers is excusing himself from the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Next item would be public comment on non-agenda items. Seeing no members from the public tonight.
Sign in, please. Get in line.
We'll move on from that.
I'm pretty sure the city attorney ran them off.
Probably.
Okay, so next item is an overview of Robert's Rules of Order in our Planning Commission charter. Very timely with the addition of our new commissioners. Mike, Eileen, you're going to lead the discussion here, so I'll go ahead and turn things over to you to get the ball rolling.
Thank you. And I'm going to leave a little bit of time at the end for questions and answers, but also feel free to jump in if you have a question while I'm speaking, or you can also ask me after the meeting as well. Thank you very much for having me here. It's been about 2 years since I've been in front of Planning Commission, but it's always a treat to get to visit with this body. I am going to give you just the 30,000 foot view of legal issues for Planning Commission. I could easily talk for hours about probably a lot of these. You don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. So we're just going to hit the highlights and kind of the pitfalls too. And then if you have any questions, again, let me know. So we're going to start with Robert's Rules of Order, although we've been using them throughout the meeting, and this group seems quite comfortable with them, which is good. But I wanted to hit this first because for those who are not used to using Robert's Rules, they can seem, I think, a little bit intimidating at first. But the best way to think about it is it's just rules to run an orderly meeting, especially since this group does a recording of their meeting as opposed to council, who also uses Robert's Rules of Order, but they are videotaped, and so it can be easier to figure out what they're doing from the videotape as opposed to an audio tape. So as you've seen throughout this meeting, the chair is the one running the meeting as the presiding officer. And so the thought is that he's both the most important person and the least important person in the room. He's there to facilitate and there to keep order. So that's not my saying. That's the theory. No offense to you, Mr. Chair. So the chair will, as he has done today, open the meeting. He will announce the activity, so he'll keep you through the agenda. He will recognize members before they can speak. He will state the questions and call for votes. And he will also enforce order and decorum. I don't think this group is going to need that. We're lucky that in North Bend our groups don't really need that. And then he'll decide all questions of order and close the meeting. So the order of debate is important when a motion is made. As you all know, you would have to make a motion to officially do anything as a group. But the thing to remember, too, is the person making a motion has the right to speak to it first. So when you're deliberating, just remember to follow these rules. And then the key thing that a lot of groups forget but is important to note is that each member needs to at least have the opportunity to speak to an item before any one member can speak to it a second time. And the reason is to just get the full input of the group. Some folks may be more shy, some folks may be more extroverted, and the idea behind that rule is to get the folks who are more shy to get them to come out of their shells a little bit and get their chance to speak. Additionally, members should not interrupt each other or the chair. Again, because this is an audio-taped meeting, that's especially important. So for Mike or whoever's doing the minutes, he'll have a harder time making those minutes if there's people talking over each other. So please just wait until someone has finished talking before you speak. And similarly, the chair is going to help with that as well, is that members are supposed to be recognized by the chair before speaking. Additionally, too, this is something I don't often see, but it's technically what we're supposed to be doing, is that members are to address all remarks to the chair. This seems a little formal, and you guys may or may not do that consistently. The reason that rule exists is to, if there's disagreements, that can kind of take the emotion and the heat out of it. So, for example, if Commissioner Miller was disagreeing with Commissioner Torgerson, she would direct whatever her comments are to the chair and not at Commissioner Torgerson. So I don't anticipate you guys will have issues with that, but just... that's why that rule exists.
In what way would she do that?
She would see if you, I'm trying to think of how to explain it. She would say, Chair, I, with respect to X, Y, or Z comments, I would propose alternative Y, or I don't think we should do X, or something like that. She would just state her position, but she would state it to the chair as opposed to the person that she perhaps disagreed with. So again, most bodies don't actually do this. Council hardly ever does this. I can't imagine that in Planning Commission that you guys actually do this very often. Mike, you're here more often than
I have never recalled having come to that level.
It's if you don't do it, it's not wrong. It doesn't invalidate any of your motions. It's just if you are having a heated disagreement, that's a good way to diffuse it, because there's no comments directed at the person you may be disagreeing with.
I'd say most of the time, and probably you're touching on this later, most of the time, I think when it's important to us that comments be directed to the chair is when it's an audience member or there are questions.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask the chair about something in the audience, or the audience is going to address to the chair, and we're going to talk to staff.
Right.
We don't engage directly with the audience.
That's right.
Formally, we do.
That's right. That's right. So moving on to points in order and appeal, If for whatever reason you guys do feel like the rules have been broken, that the Roberts rules are broken, the appropriate thing to do is to raise a point of order. And so then the chair will tee up what the point of order is. He will rule on that point of order. And if that member disagrees, they can appeal the chair's ruling. Again, these are probably going to be extremely rare for you, but if things are getting off track or you're getting sidetracked or you can't remember what the motion is, that might be a good way to just redirect the focus of the meeting. And so finally, to adjourning does take a motion, and if a majority of the group votes in favor to adjourn the meeting, then the meeting ends. And that type of motion cannot be debated. I'm not going to go over the different motions that are possible. I do have a motions cheat sheet from Jurassic Parliament that I'm going to pass around. And I'll note that this is free on their website, and this is not copyrighted, or they want you to disseminate these. These folks come to our city attorney trainings, and it's a really helpful group. I always learn something new from them, but this is something that they love to have circulated. So this is just a cheat sheet for you guys, and I usually have one of those in council meetings as well. So okay, so I am going to move on quickly to your North Bend Commission, Planning Commission procedures as well. And you guys can read this, so I'm just going to hit the highlights here. And for those of you who have been on planning commissions elsewhere or been on this planning commission for a while, this is going to be a very old hat for you. So as you know, planning commission is an advisory body to the city council. Your role is going to be preparing and amending the comprehensive plan, or making recommendations on those to the city council, to prepare development regulations for city council's recommendation. And then also to ensure public participation as required by the Growth Management Act.
Order, Mr. Chair. I'm pleased to see that we only meet once a month now.
I actually had a question. Commissioner McFarland is correct in that, and Mr. McCarty and I discussed this before this, is that in your Planning Commission procedures, it says that you meet once a month, and yet on the website, and in practice, you guys meet twice a month.
I can assure you that in my 11 years, we've always met twice a month, unless we've canceled.
Then perhaps Mr. McCarty and I need to make an amendment to the Planning Commission procedures. So I do apologize for that. you can adapt. This is true.
Midnight meeting once a month.
No. just know that your meetings run from 7 to 9. So if the meeting is going to run past 9, you will need a motion to extend the meeting time. Members are supposed to notify city staff and the chair 48 hours in advance of an absence if possible. That's so staff and the chair have an idea of whether there will actually even be a quorum for this meeting. If the chair and the vice chair are unable to attend, obviously they'll need someone to run the meeting, so they will delegate one of you to run that meeting.
So in our last meeting, we didn't have neither the chair or the vice chair were here and had not delegated. So we took it upon ourselves. Is there something in Robert's rules that actually says how you handle such?
It's a good question, and I don't know the one off the top of my head. But if you had nominated amongst yourselves who to run the meeting, that is a fine solution by me.
And we handled it. Yeah. Just became cured because I had that.
Yeah. And I went, Well, that's in your planning commission procedures, but I wouldn't be surprised if Robert's Rules had something in it. Yeah. And I can take a look into that if you like, or if you're just curious.
It's the first time in a long time.
If you are going to be absent as well, you are able to provide comments on a topic being addressed by the planning commission. And if you submit no comments, then our planning commission procedures presume that you are neutral or that you simply have no comments. And just know, too, that if you do miss a meeting and the planning commission takes final action on that item, that was your chance to vote on that item. You cannot bring back items that you were absent for. And under our procedures, unfortunately, proxy votes are not permitted. So no sending your neighbor in. And then I'm going to move on now quickly to the Open Public Meetings Act. Just know that this portion of the law does apply to the Planning Commission. This is what oftentimes are called sunshine laws, and the idea is that government is supposed to do their business out of the open with public availability, and so public can see what decisions are being made by the government and why, what is the process. You know, it's to avoid closed-door meetings. It's probably obvious that these types of Planning Commission regular meetings are meetings under the OPMA, but just be aware that other things that you may not think of as potentially being meetings could be if business is discussed and action is taken. So study sessions can be open public meetings, workshops, retreats, conference calls. So as long as you have a quorum addressing the business of the city, whether it's, you know, a regularly scheduled meeting, it can be a meeting that is supposed to be open to the public. And so if you end up having an accidental illegal meeting, then we have a bit of a problem.
And question, a quorum means four or more?
For you guys, I think so. We just redefined that.
It used to be
that.
Three.
Yeah.
It's a little bit odd.
Because I think we amended
it. Yeah, but we did amend it to four.
In 2017, yeah. Because three is technically not a quorum. Its quorum is supposed to be majority. So three was never a quorum for this group. But it's easy to accidentally circumvent the OPMA. So especially with technology these days, emails and text chains can be problematic if there's four of you on it. So, for example, when you receive emails from staff, that's fine. Passive receipt of information is okay. But I would urge you not to reply all, especially not saying, oh, I love this development regulation, Mike. I'm voting yes. And if everyone says, I vote yes, then we've accidentally just had a serial meeting. So, and I always call them walking quorums because that's what it was in text. Or, no, I'm mixing my metaphors here. So you can accidentally have an email meeting, but then also, too, if you guys meet in groups smaller than a quorum for purposes of circumventing the act, so let's say Commissioner McFarland and maybe. Well, I won't pick on anyone. How about that? But don't. The thought is you can't have members clustering in groups of two or three making decision, and then that group splinters off and talks to the other two or three and makes a decision, because what you've done there is just completely circumvented the meaning of the act, which is you're supposed to deliberate in public so the public can see what you're doing. And so if you're going from person to person gathering votes for a group for the vote, that's a serial meeting, and that's a violation of the OPMA in the state.
Can I suggest the best practice?
Yes, which, please.
And tell me if you disagree. So you send out the packet via email, and I'll send comments in, and you would then send those comments to the rest of the commissioners. So
yeah.
You have control over that. It's not me hitting reply all, and you might send my questions along with your responses to my comments to the rest of the commissioners.
And then encouraging discussion at the meeting.
Yeah, exactly.
So you reply just to him and not to all of us.
Right.
And then he replies to all of us.
Yeah, and I do that frequently when we get our packet. And then I will often say, please share with the other commissioners. Sometimes I just forget. But I think that's, for me at least, that's intended.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I say, don't share this with the other commissioners, because it's just the, you know, maybe I have a conflict of interest question that obviously wouldn't be shared with. But that's better than hitting reply all.
Got it.
Yeah, I would urge you not. I would urge you not to hit reply all.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
Just to.
Because I've
just
seen
to avoid.
I've seen it in the past, and that's not good.
Right. And then also too, you know, what about social situations? This is a small community. You guys are often probably going to see each other at the grocery store, at church, or at other social functions, and that's fine. That's absolutely fine. Just be aware of, please don't talk city business and come to any decisions. A lot of times, council members may avoid sitting in a group if they're all perhaps at the same, ribbon cutting or I'm trying to think of something that's not a public meeting, so as to avoid any appearance that they're having an illegal meeting. Know, too, that there are some exceptions to the OPMA. For example, if we need to go into the executive session to consult with an attorney, with me. This isn't going to come up for you guys very often, for planning commission. For council, it certainly does. But there may be circumstances where we do want to take this group into an executive session. So just be aware that that's something that's possible. Most of the time, I'm going to get advice to you via either on the phone or via a privileged email. So. And then, additionally, adjourning public meetings, too. Know that if, for whatever reason, there is no quorum, less than a quorum can adjourn to a specified time or place. Moving on to the Public Records Act, be aware that, so this is another one of those sunshine laws, be aware that your emails and any other writings or records pertaining to city business are going to be open to the public. That includes your text messages, that includes tweets, even if they're on your personal phone. I hate getting texts from clients because I really prefer to do everything via email and things like that, because my texts are also subject to the Public Records Act if it relates to city government. So just be aware. It doesn't mean you can't do that, but be aware that anything that you that any sort of record you create in that way relating to city business can be subject to release to the public. So also be thinking about that too. And a good rule of thumb is never put anything in writing you wouldn't want on, you know, on the front page of the newspaper, because it may end up there at some point in time.
Heather and Susan, are you guys set up with your city email accounts now?
Yes. Okay. I just looked into it before I came here.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, there's stuff from last week.
So that's, again, just to protect you guys so that your personal email account doesn't become subject to public records.
Okay. And then finally, I'm going to talk about ethics and appearance of fairness issues. A lot of this is going to be really, really common sense type stuff as opposed to the Roberts rules, where I think it's less common sense. So just be aware that, you know, as a governing body, you guys are going to be making decisions that affect other folks out here in the city. And there may be times where your personal interests may conflict with your interest as a member of the planning commissioner. So one thing to think about is that if, for whatever reason, you don't think you can be fair or impartial because you have an interest in a matter before the Planning Commission, what you should do is when you come to the meeting where the item is being deliberated, you would say, you know, my name is Eileen Kiefer. I'm a planning commissioner, and I have X interest. I am disclosing that interest, and I am recusing myself from the meeting. A best practice is to leave leave the meeting at that point in time. I note that our planning commission procedures, I think, only require it if it's an in-kind or monetary interest. But I skew conservative on this kind of thing. It's more about the appearance, and that's a big deal, because if the public loses trust, that's a huge deal. And so if you do have to recuse yourself, you would just sort of wait outside. The rest of the commission would deliberate, they would vote, and then they would bring you back into the meeting. And then for the record, you would say, you know, I'm Eileen Kiefer, I'm back, having recused myself from that matter. So it's clear.
If we have a question on whether there might be a conflict of interest, can we run those through city staff and then to you for your legal opinion?
Yes.
And then in a public meeting, if you determine you don't believe there is a conflict of interest, we can then share that we've inquired, we've received a legal opinion, so we are going to participate in the meeting.
Sure.
I mean, it's not an automatic, right? I'm just...
It's not an automatic no. In fact, there's no police... You guys are the best police of that, right?
Right.
Because you know your interests better than anyone else. So you are absolutely welcome to call Mike. You're absolutely welcome to call me, and we can walk you through it. I'm in sort of a unique position where my client is the city as opposed to any one of you individually, but part of representing the city is trying to insulate the decisions from potential challenges because perhaps a member voted that shouldn't have. So I will give you my best legal advice on that. That's a good way, I think, to handle that situation. So we have it clear for the record, either way.
I just know from my previous experience in the in elected capacity, yeah. that came up a lot.
Yes.
And often yes. the city attorney would advise us one way or another.
Yes.
Then it becomes up to us if the attorney says there's no legal conflict,
right.
you're not putting the city at any risk. It's now up to you whether
right.
you want to participate in the conversation. Or
right.
Some did, some didn't.
Right.
So and then again, just always best to disclose, just
yeah.
so that
they yeah.
appear
yeah.
like they're probably some yeah.
I would share my time. There's been a handful of times when a commissioner or another has yeah. recluse themselves from an item. An example would be if we were considering a zoning change,
yes.
that they had property in, yes. and it was specifically, you know, that property
right.
was in the in within that, right?
That's right.
One of the broader ones is that's always been kind of curious to me, and I don't know any way around. I can't think of a specific time when we have, but if we were looking at something that would, say, affect all residential zones, that would pretty much apply to every single member, right? So, obviously there's some give and take in that.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's all very fact specific too, so the best thing to do is just ask, and we can help sort you through that. Because you're right that it's a balancing act really between your role as a planning commissioner, but just because you're a planning commissioner doesn't mean you have to retire from all business and you have to move outside of the city and have no interest in anything that the planning commission does. You're weighing those. Be also aware that there is a code of ethics for municipal officers in the Washington statutes and the RCWs. The main ones that planning commissioners should be concerned about are making sure that municipal officers don't use their position to secure special privileges or exemptions for themselves or for others. Also know that you are prohibited from basically getting or receiving any compensation, gift, gratuity, or reward for a matter related to your services, so no bribes or otherwise. Also, just be aware, too, that the employment that you can take outside of your planning commission duties, you're not supposed to accept employment or engage in business that you would reasonably expect would require you to disclose confidential information acquired by your position. For planning commission, I suspect this is less of an issue for you guys than perhaps from council. And then also too, you guys are prohibited from disclosing confidential information gained by virtue of being on the planning commission if you're going to be using that for personal gain. So that one is absolutely very pertinent to you guys. So, for example, if you know that a potential rezone is coming that's going to make a lot of property more profitable, I would advise against buying a bunch of land in that area that you're about to rezone.
Most of the time we find that out in a public meeting, however.
Right.
So.
Right.
Right. I was just thinking that all of our stuff is public, right? So, really, it's only been a year for me, but I don't think there's nothing that we've done really that is confidential.
No. Again, I think that's trying to think of one that would come into place for planning commission. I think
the only way I could see that it could would be if we were in an executive session to be advised right. about something.
Yeah.
Development.
My time would go out of that situation. Yeah.
Well, and then the actual action that you're anticipating is going to be public.
Right.
So
right.
that's the thing, is that if so, that one's probably not going to come up for you guys very much. The biggest concern for planning commission is just advocating for particular development proposals. You guys are an advisory board to the council, but you are prohibited from advocating for particular development proposals, either before the planning commission or in front of city council. So just be aware of that.
Unless that was a development agreement that comes
yes.
before the commission, mm-hmm. and we're appearing before the council on behalf of the commission.
That's right. That's right.
You're advocating for the commission's position.
That's right. Not for the particular
right.
development. Yeah. So in a lot of times where you would be advocating for a particular development, most of the time is going to be because you have perhaps a self-interest in that development.
Right.
And you're going to recuse yourself from this decision anyways. So, but then don't also take the opportunity to go in front of council and advocate on behalf of that development.
Can I ask a question before we move on?
Yes, please.
For three topics we just covered, does the state still require training?
Yes.
For that, because I know...
For OPMA and
OPMA
for PRA?
And, yeah, PRA.
They do. And, in fact, if you're getting to my resources, is there are some great resources out there for the state training. The AG has some great training on the Sunshine Laws. But they do, and I forget, I think it's annually that that you guys have to take your training. I could be confused.
It's not annually, but I know it's good for, because I had to redo mine.
Oh, did you?
I've had to do it now 3 times.
Okay.
But it's like every 2 years or 4 years, okay. So the new commissioners will probably get an email from the city clerk.
Susie sent it.
Okay, so she already sent it. Okay. Saying, you got to take this training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's online, so it's not that big.
She has a link online right now.
Yeah.
Susie is excellent and will take good care of you, mm-hmm. as will Mike and the rest of the CED staff. And I'm going to just breeze through the rest of this. Public participation is a big part of what Planning Commission does. The GMA requires an awful lot of hearings. So do a lot of other statutes here in Washington. And the North Bend Municipal Code has a great majority of those public hearings being held before this very body. The chair will play a large role in the public hearings. A lot of it will just be guiding the members of the public through what to expect from a public hearing, what the order of business is, that there's a sign-in sheet, that there will be written meetings, that type of thing, because members of the public aren't really going to normally be super familiar with the hearing procedures. So the chair will lay all of that out for them. And additionally, I'll just note that per your Planning Commission procedures, you do have the what I call the open mic night portion of the meeting, where items that are not on the agenda are open for public comment. And at this body, those folks get 5 minutes to speak, which is a lot compared to the 3 minutes they get at council.
Can I go back to the public hearing list here?
Oh, yes,
seven
please.
Items. So I'm going to suggest this for you.
Mm-hmm.
When I was staffed at commissions, we would always, whenever there was a public hearing, which didn't happen a lot,
mm-hmm.
we would give the chair the kind of the script to read, if mm-hmm. you will. It was almost exactly a script. And that might help you make sure you get all this required information
sure.
in there.
Yeah.
And we don't, so far we haven't gotten a lot of people at public hearings or any people.
Right.
So if nobody's here, you might not have to read it, but if there's somebody here, at least everybody's on the same page with how it's going to operate.
Yeah, good.
And it's the same thing every time. That might help.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the last page of the Planning Commission procedures has that outline.
Okay.
So we can
I was going to say, we used to literally have it in there, and that's what I always used was exactly that, the script that I would walk through.
Okay.
So, Mike, is that an action that you could take if we have a public hearing on a particular agenda, just include that script?
Yeah, I think we could,
with the package?
If it's just kind of a template that we follow for whatever hearing, then maybe we'll just have that available in the Planning Commission box and pull it out when we have a hearing.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want me to request one from that I've written before?
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
I don't have with me, but I can email and get it for you just as a starting point. The procedures might be slightly different, but
that'd be wonderful.
Okay. Good.
And then to go over just some general guidelines for the meeting. This is all very common sense stuff. This is the kinds of things we teach kindergartners, but just be courteous and professional of all times. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way. The stuff we teach kindergartners is probably the best things that we ever learn in our lives, right? So please be courteous and professional at all times of other PC members, city staff, and citizens. Please avoid inappropriate sidebar discussions or other discourteous behavior. So having sidebar discussions is, first of all, rude, but then more importantly, what it can look like to members of the public is that you're not having a meeting in public, is that you're trying to discuss things in secret. And the same thing is true if you're texting each other or if you're texting your wife or whoever, if you're on your phone. Audience members sometimes see that, and we can get Public Records Act requests for, a commissioner's text messages, emails sent during the meeting. And I have noted that there have been some council members who have been embarrassed by such Public Records Act requests. So just be aware that you're a bit under the petri dish at these meetings. Also, please don't personally criticize each other if you disagree with them. I do not think this is going to be a problem. I have not seen that in North Bend ever, which is lovely. And then also because we do have limited amount of time, please don't engage in repetitive arguments or discussions. So state your point and then move on with business. And then finally as well, please just respect each other's differences. You guys are not all going to agree on everything all the time, but just honor those disagreements, respect those, vote, and then move on to the next order of business. And so finally, I have here at the end just resources of folks who can help you. So we've got city staff. I'm available. We already mentioned the AG's open government training. We've got the Municipal Research and Services Center. They've got some great publications. It's no substitute for legal advice, but the publications can be good for some quick answers. You've got the Association of Washington Cities. And then also, if you have any, burning Robert's Rules questions, there are advisors on parliamentary procedure. The Jurassic Parliament organization that I mentioned earlier is just one of those. So if you guys decide that you have a burning desire to learn all of the ins and outs of Robert's Rules, let us know. We can assist with that. So, thank you. That concludes. Do I have any questions?
Great. Yeah, a couple things. One thing that's not on your resources is the short course for local planning.
Yes.
That occurs every so often. I think last time I saw the Department of Commerce, or whatever they're calling themselves now.
I think it's still Commerce. Yeah.
That's a record.
Yeah.
Department of Commerce puts out the American Planning Association and Planning Association of Washington, I think, are still involved. Okay. That's great, and it travels around the state, and you get various attorneys and planners talking about, the Growth Management Act from the high level down to development regulations to a lot of the stuff that you've covered, but in a lot more detail.
Yes, that's a great resource. I'm glad you mentioned it. When I moved here, that was one of the first things I did, and I found it really helpful to orient myself as to Washington planning law, which is quite different from other jurisdictions.
And they used to have some of those online. I don't know if they still have them. I know there were some issues with them, but they might have that. And then a question that's not addressed in here, and I don't think it's come up in my year on the commission. What about participation remotely via phone or Skype or iPhone? Or what do you say about that?
So it is totally legal to do that. I don't know that we have ever done that in this body before. I don't know that our council's ever done that. But we certainly have clients that do have council members that do phone in to meetings. That is absolutely allowed under the OPMA. You just have to make sure that the technology works and that everyone can hear, that not just you guys can hear, but the members of the public can hear as well. That is absolutely an option if you need to do it.
We would need Wi-Fi access.
Yeah.
Is there no Wi-Fi access?
Well, maybe the new city or is just on board.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Mayor Ken was giving out wrong passwords last week, if I recall. So that may be part of the issue.
That's the opposite of number six, public participation.
I had a couple questions. On the Robert's Rules order of debate, you mentioned the not speaking until everyone's had a chance to. Just for clarification, does that include discussion of something that someone brought up, or is the idea that everyone gets a chance to initially bring up an issue? And then debate happens after that.
Oh, that's a really good question. I think it really means just the motion at large. But if someone brings up an issue, perhaps that someone didn't think of before, what I would do is I would still just go through the order in which it was done. I apologize. That sentence did not make sense. If you're the one to make a motion and you speak to it first, perhaps a good way to keep track of it would just to be to go around the table in order, and then perhaps if Commissioner Torgerson brought up something new that you hadn't heard of, then you would be able to speak to it again.
Okay. And the second question was, I haven't been part of a workshop yet, but the part that you were talking about there, about workshops, I feel like, is there, so we've talked a lot about like the zoning changes workshop that the council did. Is that done? That sounds like that would have had to be in a public meeting then, that it was public, you know, everyone was part of. Isn't that kind of against what a workshop should be, where you're more outside of the public scrutiny and learning and talking about it? But
unfortunately, under the OPMA, just about everything is going to be in the public. So, for example, council does their work study. Those are still public meetings. They're noticed. They're on the website. They're taking in information, and you're right, they're not deliberating at those meetings. They're just basically getting information and thinking through issues and not taking any final action. But that is done in the public because, again, the thought is you don't want folks making decisions based on information that isn't available to the rest of the public unless it's something very crucial, like for you guys, legal advice.
At the same time, though, those work study meetings are just for the council. So the right. public can be there and observe, yes. but there's not the continual opportunity to speak okay. to an agenda right. item or things like that. So it's intended as their time.
Right. Okay, that makes sense.
That's a good distinction. Thanks, Mr. McCarty.
Any other questions?
Just a general one. Through the years, and just as tonight, we're amazingly low attendance generally from the public, and a group that is generally very comfortable with each members, and so we, in general, quite frequently are fairly informal. Do you recommend, because of the heightened scrutiny of public records, that we be much more formal? Stick strictly to them, or
do you mean when running a meeting, or do you mean
as the meeting's going? I'm not currently. I didn't address the chair. That's my question. So
that doesn't bother me at all. That's a tool, and again, most people don't use that tool. Mm-hmm. It's where it's really helpful is where you have a body that perhaps has butted heads on some issues in the past, mm-hmm. and perhaps are having some emotional difficulties with moving past those disagreements. A well-functioning group won't really need that rule, quite frankly.
How about engagement with public on an item on the agenda that's not part of the public hearing?
Which happens Jerry, often.
That happens often. It's a matter of decorum. I think for a member of the public, too, it could be off-putting if you're addressing their comments through the chair. That could be perhaps impersonal for them.
Let me even say the reverse. It's one of the things that I think that I've had some discomfort with and never could quite satisfy myself where we should fall is, member of the public is here, we're talking about an item that's on the agenda, mm-hmm. it's not the public hearing night, that person would like to provide comment. Do we accept those comments? Do we engage with them? Or say, no, we've got to stick strictly to public hearing?
Oh, I mean, I don't see any harm in letting them comment. They can always provide comments via email. That is never anything that bothers me. More process and more comment, unless it's disrupting the meeting. Mm-hmm. Given the turnout tonight, I suspect that's not going to be the case. So I would err towards more inclusion and more welcoming of comments, unless it's, again, disrupting your meeting.
And I think that's generally the way this body has tended to go because we're a knowledge-seeking body, right? We're trying to dig through the issues to best advise counsel. And so I think that's the way it's generally been handled. But it's one of those things that occurs occasionally in my mind. I'm like, wow, should we maybe not be doing that?
Yeah.
So can I just a variation of that
yes, please.
Question?
we have something on our standard agenda, in public comment on non-agenda items.
Right.
Is there some reason that it has to be that restrictive? I mean, can we just have a public comment period, as long as it's not a public hearing item? And so if there is something on the agenda, the public can comment before we get into the discussion, because I think that's part of what I struggle with is once we're now engaging with staff and amongst ourselves, and the public wants to jump into the conversation, that's where I think the risk of it becoming disruptive and disjointed. But if the public has an opportunity to get their comment in on that agenda topic at the beginning of the meeting, then we're able to take that into consideration. Is that...
That's one way to handle it. I'm unaware of anything that requires you to restrict public, unless there's a public hearing, of course, to restrict public comment to the particular agenda item. So you could handle it that way and have all of your comments be given at the beginning of the meeting. Or what the way council handles it is they will introduce an item and then they will ask if there's public comment on that particular item before the discussion between the governing body occurs. So that way, before deliberation happens, you have the benefit of that public comment. And it's really just a matter of how formal and rigid do you want the meeting to be. The benefit, I think, of having a general comment period at the beginning of the meeting is that if folks do need to leave for other items, you're not keeping them waiting around until, oh, it's 8:30, I can't stay till 8:30. Or if you're going to do that too, if you're going to have comment on each agenda item, you might also allow exceptions for folks that can't stay until that time for that item. But to answer your question, there's multiple ways to slice it, and it's whichever way is works well for you as a body. It's just fine.
Yeah, I've seen it work really well the way you've just described, where even where there's a public hearing, some people may just want to talk to you, and the chair or mayor would have let that person talk at the beginning of the meeting and would announce, we have a public hearing tonight. It's item 4 on your agenda, but if you really feel that we'd like you to hold your comments for the hearing, but if you really need to talk, like you have to leave early, whatever, you just want to give us some information and you're not interested in sticking around to the discussion, we'll take your comment during this first public comment period.
Yeah. Okay. So what's the will of the commission then on that? Should we, because it's on every agenda,
right?
We could just say opportunity for public comment and not say agenda versus non-agenda.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's what I would propose.
I'm comfortable with that.
I was I'm looking in the bylaws. I don't see anything that restricts us in the bylaws, but that might be just something that
your Robert's Rules of Order and your Planning Commission procedures, except for the the big ticket things, your ethics items and your OPMA, PRA type stuff. But the procedural items for your Robert's Rules, I just don't want you to get their tools. But if you mess it up, don't worry about it. If somebody proposes a motion and you don't vote on the motion, then somebody else proposes another motion, don't freak out. It will be okay. They're guidelines, but like I said, they're guidelines and they're tools for running your meeting. But I don't want you to feel so restricted by them that it kind of gets in the way of your other goals.
I have a simple question. About the motions and the seconds and the ayes. And so, for example, he says, I would like to approve last week's minutes. Anybody can just say, I motion that? How does that work?
You would make a motion to approve.
I make a motion to anybody in this group?
Just except the chair. The chair does not make a motion.
And then someone else says, I second that.
You need a second to move on with discussion and voting.
That doesn't necessarily mean you support it.
Right.
I mean, sometimes people will second motions just to get the discussion on the floor.
Sure. Move it on.
Right.
And I think, I guess maybe this is another one for if there is any formal rule. Typically, again, informally, I think we practiced that if a commissioner wasn't at the previous meeting, they typically won't make a vote on minutes because they weren't here to hear them.
Right.
that there's any actual rule on that. We've just kind of done it as a practice.
I don't know that there's a rule on that either, but I think it's a good practice. It's not a bad practice.
But I mean, you read the minutes, even if you're not here.
Yeah. But you don't have, and I guess if you've heard the tape, it's a matter
right.
of, are the minutes accurate?
Right.
If you weren't part of the meeting, you're not sure, you don't
right,
know.
Right, right, right.
That's the only reason. I'm not suggesting that needs to, I'm just wanting to point out that we've been doing that. There's nothing that says you have to not.
No, because you're exactly right. They could have listened to the tapes and they
yeah.
could know that the meeting minutes are totally accurate. But
right or wrong, yeah.
I didn't listen to the minutes.
So I have a question for you all. It's just in terms of how you'd like me to address you. So generally when we're meeting in just small situations like this without much of the public there, I in the past have just addressed you by your name. If you and I kind of step up that formality if there's more public. Would you prefer me to address you as commissioner last name or just kind
your
of
high majesty?
However long we can make it.
I'm really comfortable again with the informality of it often sounds odd to me to be saying Commissioner Miller, Commissioner Greenberg. Mm-hmm. Hey Scott, what do you think of this?
Hey, Rob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, no, but I'll go with the group feeling.
I vote informal.
Yeah, I'm okay with informal as well.
Me too.
Yeah, I second that.
Yeah. See, you guys didn't even need this presentation. You guys are totally agreeable.
Just wait.
But then it may be appropriate in the situation of a very crowded public hearing to then use last names, just so it doesn't seem like you guys are too buddy-buddy.
Yeah. There are definitely times we've had some heated hearings or meetings when a lot of attention to the rules and decorum were really important.
So we are a little behind schedule. This was a great discussion, and I don't want to cut anything off. Is there anything else that we should discuss? I think this was a great overview, and then good for us to kind of get on the same page procedurally. So I found this very helpful. If there's no other questions, we'll move on, and I mean, thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure.
Are you here for the duration of the meeting?
I will be here for the duration of the meeting.
Okay. So our next item on the agenda is introduction to development agreement. The owner has still not arrived. Can we still move forward with
yeah,
the
certainly.
Introduction?
This is not the formal hearing.
And are you asking us to take any
no,
action? We have a public hearing in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So this is just information and opportunity for initial questions.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's generally how we will do most agenda items with the Planning Commission. So we'll give the commissioners an opportunity to understand the item before it goes to the public hearing, just so you get a better sense of things before you start getting comments from the public. And that way you can also give direction to staff if there's edits that you want to make before it goes out for notification formally to the public.
Okay.
So this one is coming back to you, and I guess new for the new planning commissioners, but previously back 6 months ago, the applicant, Cliff Garrett, had come to the city seeking approval or consideration of a development agreement to allow marijuana retail use at his prior proposed location, which was on East North Bend Way. That was in a little house that he was interested to do a two-phased approach. First, convert the house into a retail business, and then as a second part of that, through the development agreement, construct a permanent commercial building for that use. For several reasons, that proposal didn't work out for him, I think just largely due to the cost of constructing a new building. And so he has since pursued this property at 320 Mountside Boulevard. That is within the Mountain Valley Center near Safeway. It's the northernmost block of the retail shopping center. You've got an aerial photo that shows that in the blue outline there. Previously, the Blockbuster site, which I guess kind of dates it, shows you how long that's been taken. And he's proposing actually to purchase the entire block of 320. So he would just lease out, or he would occupy one of those spaces for the retail use,
and then just continue to lease out to the other tenants for ongoing use of their businesses. There was a question brought up about which space specifically he'd be in. He would be in the southernmost space, which is abutting, the auto parts store, yeah. And then he would create a demising wall from there and divide the large existing space in half to lease out part of it to future commercial use.
Oh, so he's going to further demise?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so marijuana retail is not a permitted use in this zone. So it's only allowed basically in portions of the outlet mall under our city's current marijuana regulations. So this would either require a rezone to allow our change of our allowed use table to allow this use here, or the city has the opportunity through approval by the council of what's called a development agreement. And a development agreement allows you to go outside of the normal box of does it meet exactly the provisions of our code when they find it to be in the public interest. And so that's the process that we're in. He's asked for consideration of approval of that development agreement. So there are advantages to taking this through a development agreement as opposed to amending the code to allowing the use here. So a development agreement is a contractual agreement between the city and a private individual, a developer. And that enables you then to go above and beyond what would ordinarily just be required under the provisions of your code. So if we were to amend the development regulations, for example, to allow marijuana retail, it could be open to anybody, and you'd be just limited to what does our code say. So this is enabling us to take a little bit more of a careful approach, provide some standards that wouldn't necessarily apply if we were just applying our marijuana use regulations, and it also enables you to more carefully consider the applicant. So this can be considered, in some ways, a trial run. Is the city comfortable with this use? Do we see problems with it? And then there's the opportunity to rescind the development agreement if the applicant does not fall on the terms. So this proposed location, we feel, has a number of advantages over the prior proposed location. It's a lot closer to I-90. A lot of the customers coming to visit the use will be coming from outside the city, traveling on I-90. And so it reduces some of those impacts of activity and traffic coming to the use. It's in an existing building, in an existing shopping center, and so we feel that that is very advantageous. There's existing parking. It's a known quantity. It's surrounded by other commercial uses, so it's not having the potential impact to adjacent residences that the other one did. There's quite a bit more distance and a lot more activity in this center generally. There is also the big advantage of the revenue for the city. So currently at his Issaquah operation, the city of Issaquah nets approximately $250,000 annually from taxing the proceeds of the sale of the marijuana. So that's a big financial benefit to the city of Issaquah. This would be a somewhat smaller operation, but our finance director took a look at this and determined that we'd make somewhere in the range of $100,000 to $150,000 a year from this. And then in addition, there is in the development agreement a provision about requiring a $25,000 annual payment to the city to mitigate for some of the impacts of the traffic generated from the use so that we can put that to future transportation improvements that help with traffic flow. Another advantage is this location really helps to support an underperforming retail center. So this center has been in foreclosure, and as you can see, it's been vacant for several years. And this type of use will bring additional traffic for other potential retail uses within the center, just bringing up the kind of overall level of activity at the center. And then finally, again, the additional controls of a development agreement are advantageous. So we can really consider at a more careful scale than what we could with just a code amendment this particular use.
You mentioned foreclosure. Are you meaning building 320 or?
320, yeah.
320, mm-hmm. Okay.
So some of the potential impacts of this use, again, the added traffic. So he provided in a SEPA checklist. I don't have that off the top of my head, but it was actually a significant amount of traffic for this particular use. And so that's just something that we consider as a impact. This location is, again, much better than the prior location for minimizing that impact. And then social cultural concerns. So there may be a number of people in the community that just generally aren't comfortable with the idea of marijuana retail. And that's something that we'll just have to hear from the public on. There were quite a few people that had commented on the prior location that they weren't comfortable with that. That may have to do more with that particular location, and we'll see when we open up the public hearing what people think about that use here. And then finally, security, the potential for increased criminal activity or illicit activity in the vicinity of this. But we do feel like we have some provisions in the development agreement that will address some of those concerns. So with that, I guess we can open up the development agreement, turn it over to you guys for discussion.
Anybody questions?
I have a question.
Okay.
I don't know if it's true, but in Stanwood, Washington, I think that there was a certain range in which you could be near homes and children and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
What is that rule?
Yeah, so the state law, it used to be more restrictive than it is now. And that's what our current code is based on, that more restrictive buffer. So there was a 1,000-foot buffer between certain what were considered sensitive uses, so preschools, schools, playgrounds. There were some other areas. Yeah. And the legislature has since allowed jurisdictions to reduce that down to 100 feet for certain uses. This particular use is just barely within the 1,000-foot radius that is our code, not the less restrictive allowance under the state legislature. We're well outside of the 100-foot radius that would be the minimum requirement. And that's shown in the map that's within the packet there.
Do they have that same rule for when we used to have liquor stores or selling liquor, which is also illegal?
That's the purpose of the development agreement, too, is that local governments can reduce that 1,000-foot setback mm-hmm. by local regulation. So that's the purpose of the development agreement.
Yeah.
Rob, did you have something?
Well, I think I want to go back and make sure Heather got her question answered. If I understood, you were asking, does 1,000-foot, is that also apply to, like, liquor stores? Is that,
right.
Is that your question?
My question is, since marijuana is now legal in our state and liquor is legal in our state, I don't understand the difference, why we would have different rules.
I'm just guessing here, but I think when the legislature first set that up, it was out of concern for the public interest with the unknowns of what is this going to do for crime, what's it going to do for access for kids, just kind of the presence of seeing it in close proximity to some of those uses.
If I could comment, when we went through adopting our code originally, when we opened into that discussion, we were expecting a lot of public input and probably a lot of unfavorable public input, and we were astounded that we had almost none. And so kind of to your question, it does appear that the public has overall accepted that there's a similar use. I think it is important to point out, as what Mike's saying, is some of that setback that there, that's within state code, so we have to still abide by that. Mm-hmm.
And this proposal does abide by those minimum requirements.
Other questions?
One question I had was just regarding variances from our code. So, obviously, the 1,000-foot. Anything else?
what else is varying from strict compliance.
Yes.
That's really it. Other than that, we're providing additional levels of review.
And above.
And above, yeah, regarding signage and aesthetics and things like that to ensure that it's, we feel that it's appropriate given the, its context and location.
Well, it had to do with signage. So, a mall location like this, usually there's common mall signage. They're restricted from that, is what I'm understanding.
No, they have to abide by that. So our North Bend Municipal Code sign regulations actually adopt the Mountain Valley Center sign provisions for application within that center. So this use will then have to comply with the Mountain Valley Center sign standards.
Well, I guess what I'm wanting to be sure of is that, I could be way wrong on this, because it's there all the time, so you look right by it, right? But they would have regulations about the signage that goes on the building. Mm-hmm. But I believe they are also afforded an opportunity to have signage in the common sign that's at the entry to the plaza itself.
The monument sign.
The monument sign.
And it's
it seems to me, what I remember from the previous one we looked at, I didn't read this one, I'll say, with absolute to the letter, but I was kind of assuming that there was more restriction because that was one of my interest points in the previous proposal, was it seemed like we were being extremely restrictive on signage over other.
No, so if the Mountain Valley Center allows that signage on the common pole sign, that would be allowed for this.
Okay.
That's not considered off-premise signs. That's
okay. Right. Okay.
Yeah, I had a few things. So first, can you speak to, from the last time this came up, I remember a comment was made, and I wanted to clarify about the current code restriction at the outlet mall. Right? The current code says that it has to be at the outlet mall, but I think it was commented that you couldn't get funding or something because of the outlet mall.
Yeah, I think it relates to the loans that are in place for the owners of the property at the outlet mall because they're federally backed loans. They then could run afoul of the federal regulation regarding allowing marijuana use.
So then the code essentially doesn't allow for any location, essentially any location for marijuana use in the city.
That's, yeah, the code didn't, but the code plus the private restrictions created the situation.
So that's part of why the DEA is kind of another benefit.
Yeah, if you want to see this use.
I wanted to comment that I like this location a lot better than the old location. I think that some of your merits that you brought up were, being in and out in the shopping center. I think we kind of talked about that last time too. It's preferred. But I wanted to, with DAs in general, I wanted some clarification on how that gets drawn up. With the developer's agreement, is this? I'm assuming this is negotiated between the city and the developer. When the agreement that we see here, is this approved by the developer at this point? Is this passed the negotiation?
The developer
point?
Has seen this and is fine with this,
But
it's certainly not approved until the council approves it.
No, I mean from his point of view.
Oh, so
negotiations are done.
Yes.
Okay. So then my last question is it common, this is again lack of knowledge on my part, I think, is it common for the city to get traffic mitigation fees on an annual basis? I seem to think that the times I've heard it, it was mostly an initial fee.
An impact fee is usually levied. This would be a provision beyond that with a development agreement.
Okay. I'm not a huge fan of that. I think that's kind of above and beyond there to yearly.
That is something the applicant has agreed to.
Yeah.
I'm confused by the usage. Are we talking about if they buy the product and then they go to the outlet mall and use it? Is that what we're talking about?
No.
Usage?
About the impact fee or?
No, not about the impact fee. I guess I'm completely confused by
So this is just for purchase.
Okay.
I don't think state law allows you to consume it on premises.
I can buy your beer, you take it.
It's a siting issue.
Okay.
That was really it. It was the constraint of the siting issue.
So I do want to pass around one additional edit. So this went to the Community and Economic Development Council Committee on Tuesday to get their initial comments on this. And they had a concern about security. And their concern was that if you have a demising wall between two spaces, and that demising wall is just made out of typical sheetrock, break-ins could occur through the adjacent business that might have less security, and then you go through a simple sheetrock wall. So they had a really good suggestion that we put into here in the red line, wasn't in your packet, that any demising wall be made of concrete masonry unit blocks, and that provides a higher level of security in this case. So we provided that to the applicant. He was fine with that, so we're going to be adding that to the packet that then goes before the public for the public hearing.
Question on page 3 of the development agreement, section 3.3 on building color. I think this was a holdover from the last time we were talking about limiting colored earth tones. Would a better way of doing this talk about having colors consistent with the colors of the shopping center?
Yeah.
Because what if the shopping center as a whole changed to something that wasn't... I mean, you got almost every color in here, but I think that might just be a way so that it can't stand out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the intent. It needs to kind of be part of the overall shopping center look.
Yeah, great suggestion.
I don't know if there's design guidelines for a shopping center or something adopted that might be an easier way of referencing it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can figure out the language, but that would be my suggestion. You could even just add something like that on there.
Any other questions? Mike, I just had a couple. Thinking about kind of building the record for making the decision and going into the public hearing. I think it would be helpful, and I guess I would like to ask for a little bit more detail on the financial analysis. Where does that $100,000 to $115,000 come from? And that's a fairly big range, big difference between $100,000 and $150,000. So where does that number come from? And
that may be difficult to pin down because we're just guessing at this point about the level of transaction.
Right, but I would guess that there probably isn't a whole lot of guessing done on the owner's part, that they've probably done a fairly rigorous financial analysis and business plan.
If I may, I believe when I attended a Community Economic Development Committee meeting before the original proposal, I thought there was some data provided by the applicant. So you might go back to that, because I think he did have some projections of his assumed annual sales, but of course it's all assumption for him as well at this point. But I think you're on the right track that the applicant's got some assumptions about what his sales would be, and therefore our tax would be based off of those assumptions.
Yeah. The other comment or suggestion or request, when we were discussing the temporary use permits, we had a fair amount of dialogue around competition and other businesses, adjacent businesses to temporary uses. So I assume that the posting of the public hearing will go to, I don't know how the tenant versus ownership of those businesses that are in there.
So the notice has gone out to all the property owners within 300 feet of the site, all the owners of the Mountain Valley Center properties, as well as we provided it just as a courtesy to anyone that commented previously on the prior location, so they're aware of it.
Okay. So again, I think when thinking about building the record of decision, we're using the Issaquah location kind of as compare same owner. Here's how much tax revenue is generated in Issaquah, therefore we're deriving a number for North Bend. But my understanding of the Issaquah location is fairly standalone. It's really not a neighbor of other retail mm-hmm. businesses. I think it would be helpful to the extent that we can do it, kind of look at other communities that have incorporated these uses where they're actually in retail centers or business centers and determine if there's been any adverse effects of that kind of an occupancy versus the standalone, which I don't think was really as much an issue in the previous location that came to us. That was going to be like standalone.
We can try to look into that. My staff time for doing research is very limited, but I'll see what I can do within that context.
And perhaps I can shed a little light on this, just because we've had numerous discussions about this. It's my understanding that the applicant has visited with the neighboring, at least everyone in the shopping center, just in order to be a good potential new neighbor, and it's my understanding that those folks were on board. But certainly I would recommend them getting additional notice for the public hearing.
Yeah, right. For the record also, just for the sake of the current property owner, they wanted me to clarify that the application is on behalf of the potential purchaser, Mr. Garrett, for the proposed use. They wanted to be very clear that they're not proposing the use.
Right.
So I'll
right.
be adding that a little bit more of that in my staff report when it goes to the public.
So I know at least Mukilteo, Everett, Belfair are examples that I've driven through a number of times where they've incorporated these uses into kind of centers. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's been good or bad or indifferent. I think some assessment, because we are talking about a 10-year agreement, right?
Yes.
So, okay. So moving forward, we've got a public hearing scheduled.
Yeah, your June 14th meeting.
Okay.
So make sure that the applicant's there to represent himself.
June 13th.
June 13th, thank you. Okay. And then we'd be seeking your recommendation following your consideration of the public comment at that meeting.
Okay.
I may not be there. So if there's a quorum problem, I can change some things around to be there. But
okay.
Yeah.
Good. Any other closing? No? Mike, anything else that you want to?
Not on that item.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Next item then is tentative calendar planning for the commission.
The box here. We're not here. This. So I'll pass this around. Didn't include this in your packet because we needed to take it to the Community and Economic Development Committee for their review ahead of that. And they made a few changes based on council direction. So you'll see this is upcoming items for the remainder of the year. And we still have a huge amount of work to do. I wanted to highlight a couple items in particular. So affordable housing, that's a really big issue that has been direction from the council, and I think we've heard that from the Planning Commission as well. So we'll be coming up in June with some presentations. We've got the Dahlin Architecture Group, who's working on a few proposals for the council to consider for some of our sites where we own city property. To look into whether or not an affordable housing project might be appropriate there. So the senior center site and the park and ride site. So they'll come and present to you guys as well. And for you, it's more less in the context of the project and more in the context of what are hurdles to making affordable housing work in terms of regulations, incentives, tools, et cetera. So we'll have that presentation on June 27th. And then we'll be following up with that in July on more of the actual regulations that we might consider or incentives for developers to do affordable housing.
A few other things, floodplain regulation amendments, those will be coming before you. FEMA has updated its map, and we need to recognize that in our regulations. So we're still waiting for a few things from the Department of Ecology on that, but that will likely be coming to you in August. One of our other big things coming up towards the end of August and then into September and possibly October would be our impact fee regulations. So one of the primary directions from council is that we would really like to see more commercial and industrial development occur in the city. So that brings in additional tax revenue, it brings additional jobs, helps our jobs housing balance. We tend to skew heavily towards housing in this area. We want some more jobs. So we'll be looking at ways to incentivize commercial development and also try to balance out our impact fee regulations so that we can lessen the impact on industrial but also not give up on the funding that we need to pay to keep our levels of service up. We'll be bringing you some amendments to our urban separator overlay district and some of our other overlays to simplify those. That's been a direction in the past that those create unnecessary confusion. And look to just make the zoning more direct so that somebody looking at the zoning map knows what's allowed rather than try to look through the intricacies of our code. We heard from you at your last meeting that signs were of interest. We had plugged that in for the summer, but the council felt that some of these other issues really are taking top priority, and so they didn't want to see signs come yet.
15 minutes a year in a row.
So maybe when we have a new council and mayor, we might get more direction on that. But until then, I think one of their primary concerns was just the amount of time that might take. Sign regulations do tend to have a lot of interest with businesses, with the public, and it's complicated too. There's some state or Supreme Court cases that we need to eventually address, but it's not a simple. Throw in the amendments and be done with it. It's going to take some analysis. Other things. Some of these are just thrown in there because they're fairly simple. Some amendments to the lighting regulations, some amendments to our boundary line adjustment standards, because we kind of know what we want to do. We don't feel like it's a controversial item, and so we're just kind of plugging those in where we feel like would be an easy place to do. Big things coming up for next year would be the North Bendway Corridor design and land use plan. So this is a direction from council that along North Bendway, and particularly in our commercial zones on North Bendway, it's kind of an odd context where we have frontage directly on North Bendway where you've got commercial use, but then you have really long properties that go all the way back to the Snoqualmie Valley Trail, which creates kind of an odd situation for one single user. So want to see something that allows more master planning or some alternative mixed use typologies that allow commercial to the front and maybe some residential to the rear. So looking at that from a plan perspective, and then also thinking about how those uses relate to North Bendway itself. So some physical design elements, how are we addressing the street, the right of way, kind of a boulevard approach. So that's something that we work with a consultant, or at least work internally first, develop scope of work, and get some estimates from consultants to do that work. And we'd probably take that as a decision card to the council for funding for next year from a consultant, so they'd put that plan together. And that would be working with you guys as well once we get that process started. We'll have a lot of comp plan stuff coming up next year. So land use element, we'll have new residential and employment growth targets. Those are allocated every 6 years or so.
So we are getting those next year?
We're getting those this year, but we'll start into the process of amending our comp plan next year accordingly. Let's see. And then sign regulations. We'll plan to come back to our sign regulations next year once we've addressed some of these other issues that the council sees as the top priorities for this year, being the affordable housing and some of the zoning issues.
I have a presentation on that I'll be happy to give to the Planning Commission on sign regulations, and happy to assist on that. That's been on my to-do, or my wish-to-do list as well.
Will there be photos?
Oh, there will. Yes. Yeah, there will be.
Always fun to see.
Yeah, it is fun.
Do this.
But I want to call your attention to this caution at the top of the page. This calendar will be subject to change. It happens. I work with staff every other week to take a look at this, and every other week it changes, so it'll continue to refine. And
I see we're extremely worried about where Jesse's age.
Well, even if the dates move around, you know, a lot of these topics are the topics that we'll be discussing. So the balance of the year and in the next year.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to see us add one item to this based on earlier conversation, which should be very quick and easy, but to add the paper with review and amendments to our consent procedures. Since we have a couple corrections to make, that should be pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I agree.
I presume Commissioner McFarland means he wants to meet 3 or 4 times a month.
Exactly. I'd like to bump it up.
And more time for each meeting, right? 7 to 9, not enough time.
Exactly, yeah. And that way we can get through the stuff that CED wants us to do and get on to the real stuff that's next year.
First, Ryan, when we met, we changed the hours. We were starting at 7 and going till 10 or 11, so we changed it to 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. with dinner being served.
Only if it's held with a certain wine.
No, there was no wine.
Well, our finance director is just around the corner there, so we can ask her about that one.
Mike, anything else? This is a great preview and an idea of what's on the plate
and
we'll, coming forward.
Every couple months, we'll bring this back to you just to kind of keep you abreast of what's on the plate.
So. Yeah, good. Very helpful. All right, final item on our agenda then is an overview of the development.
And this we're just giving, we got 2 new commissioners, and it's nice just, I think, for the sake of your knowledge, every once in a while we'll come back to let you know what's going on in the city. So as a planning commission, you're not involved in development review. You're involved in making recommendations on the standards that we review the development against. But we feel like you should also be in the know as commissioners about everything that's going on. And there is an enormous amount going on in North Bend. So what you see right now is kind of just the tip of the iceberg for everything that's under review. So I just thought I'd touch on a couple of these things. There's a couple of ways I could do this. I could just go up to the map there, or I could bring up what we have on our website, which is the more interactive mapping. It's not overly interactive, but you can click on a project and it gives you the contact and a very brief description. For the sake of
I think the map.
For the sake of ease, I think the map.
Yeah, we're all able to go into the interactive map.
Yeah. And that map is about 6 months out of date now. We do want to eventually get more active in keeping it up to date, but just with staffing levels, it's hard to stay on top of that. So you guys are all aware of the hotel. I just wanted to touch base on that one because that is moving forward. So they're actively working on all their permitting for that, and they're hoping to break ground this fall. So that will be a wonderful thing to see. And what I've shown here is just things that are active but haven't yet broken ground. There's a lot out there that I'm not going to mention that has broken ground. You're probably familiar with it, you know, the Chinook Lumber, a number of residential projects, but you've seen those, so I'm not going to touch on those. Tree Farm subdivision, that's 60 lots. That is all right here, just south of, or just east of the Sideview subdivision. Right now it's a tree farm, so that will be 60 lots. Sunrise View, we know well who that property was, but south.
Not quite.
Over
there
here.
There you go.
Yeah. Just to the southwest of Offstead Elementary, there'll be 19 lots. Cade View Townhomes, so that's just off of East Park Street right here. On both sides of the street, we've got 23 townhome units that will be going in there. And that's nearly through the process, so watch for that to start breaking ground here.
Are they nearly through engineering or
development? I believe so. It's not my project, so I don't know, but
I think there's two, if I may. As I've been involved with this, there's, I think, 2 phases or 2 different projects, but they refer to them as phases. One of them is still in the processing phase. That's the second one. And I couldn't tell you on a map which one is which. But the second one is still under review. It's a binding site plan, so it'd be a staff decision, no people at hearing. And we have a draft staff plan that is currently being revised at the moment.
And then we have a lot of apartments on their way. So you guys are familiar already with Phoenix Plaza that's under construction near the downtown.
Can you point to that?
That one is the old explosion site.
That's the last Schwab
there. Yeah.
What's that?
Were you here when we exploded?
Yeah, our barn got, the windows are still broken.
Oh, wow.
So what's it going to be?
So that one's a mixed-use project. Ground floor will be commercial. Mm-hmm. The a number of apartments above that.
Okay. How many floors?
Two stories of apartments above the story of commercial.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah.
Bigger apartment projects, though, are the Dahlgren apartments out here. So this is the Dahlgren property. 212 units coming. So that's moving its way through engineering review right now. And I think they're also hoping to get started this fall. That will include a four-acre new public park. So through not a development agreement, but some an overlay, requirements of an overlay zone, they were required to provide public public park land in exchange for getting some uses that wouldn't have otherwise been allowed by the underlying zones, so residential instead of industrial. So that will give us the new Dahlgren Family Park, and they'll be constructing improvements to that park for the equivalent of what they had to provide in park impact fee revenue for the 212 units. So we'll see a new entrance here to the park that will eventually provide entry into King County's Tanner Landing Park, as well as some playground stuff, and it will be a nice amenity. Also, the River Run apartments, 129 units right here, just south of Chinook Lumber. So that's working its way through the process as well. King County Loop Program, that's a new maintenance facility for King County's Loop System. That's their biosolids. It's mostly just a truck operation there, so they a maintenance facility for their maintenance fleet.
Could you give just a little bit more, because I've been getting asked about that recently, yeah. And I have no understanding of when we say loop or maintenance facility, what trucks, what is.
So the King County Loop System is the biosolids transfer. So they collect the biosolids from the wastewater treatment plant down at Brightwater. Mm-hmm. They take those solids to eastern Washington to deposit on agricultural lands. And the facility in North Bend is just for their truck operation, their fleet. So they bring the trucks here, they wash them, they keep them overnight here, and then they take them, again, empty out to Brightwater to collect and keep the.
Okay, so I assume if they're washing out trucks that are carrying biosolids, that there's some pretty strict.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not an open wash.
Okay, thank you.
An exciting one that's still a little bit unknown but is working its way through the process is the Sequoia Valley Athletic Center. That is up by Meadowbrook Farm on the big open, where am I at here?
Right here. I think you're a little too low. Right there.
Yeah. So those are a big open field that's just to the north of Encompass. And what they're interested to do is athletic fields for kind of primarily for the select leagues, so soccer fields, baseball fields, and then eventually a second phase of the project, which would be indoor sports courts. The Planning Commission and the recommended to Council. Council approved a development agreement previously to allow that in phases. And that's still working its way through the process, subject to approval of a sewer utility local improvement district for the west whole area west of the South Fork Snoqualmie River. A couple primary potential projects that are coming soon that are noteworthy. Pierce Aluminum is an aluminum fabrication business that takes large aluminum sheets and makes primarily marine components out of those. So they're looking to add a facility over here on this property just south of Wood River. So that would be kind of a light industrial and office building. All the operations are interior to the building. But it's a good use with some employment. This is a big one that's in the works. So they came in for a pre-application review, and they've submitted their developer deposit for this. There's still some unknowns about it, though, in that it would likely come to you guys with a development agreement. A senior mixed-use housing project. So this would be downtown here, right on the Snoqualmie River. It's a large project, 6 stories tall, commercial on the ground floor fronting North Bend Way, residential above that, and that's working its way through the initial inquiry process. So they're just in feasibility right now, but they do seem fairly serious. So that, if it moves forward as proposed, that would have to come through a development agreement because it exceeds our height limits and some of our density limits. So that one will be going first to council committee to kind of get their initial blessing. And if they agree that they want to consider that through the public process, it comes to the planning commission, and you'll be reviewing those proposals.
What parcel is that on?
It is next to the park and ride. Street.
Yeah,
just right across the street from the park and ride on the river.
The municipal house?
Yeah.
And that's the courthouse.
Okay. What type of senior?
It's just market rate senior housing. It's actually the company is focuses on the East Indian community in their marketing, but it's open to anybody. It's not just for anybody.
So it's age restricted by
age restricted,
owner.
Yes, but market rate.
Okay.
A couple other things. You guys have probably heard about the city's interest in doing affordable housing projects. So either potentially on the senior center site or over at Park and Ride site. So the council's going to be considering that. Again, we'll be bringing the presentation to you guys as well from Dahlan Architecture Group about how that relates to our efforts broadly to incentivize affordable housing. Mutual Materials, so just immediately north of Chinook Lumber, Mutual Materials is more of a landscape contractor supply type business that focuses on bricks and cultured stone and things like that. So it would be kind of a synergistic use next to Chinook Lumber, and they seem fairly serious as well.
Is it just the immediate parcel north or that whole blue block?
It is everything right here. So those are projects, private development projects. I wanted to give you just a sense also of things that the city and the Sideview Metropolitan Park District are doing that are kind of of relevance, just in terms of getting busy here this summer. So we've got 3 roundabouts coming in. We've got a roundabout proposed here for not Cedar Falls, but 136th and 436th, and that's associated with the apartment project there. New roundabout there off exit 32. Then you come up to North Bend Way, another roundabout right there, and that is being done largely through contributions in lieu of developer impact fees for those projects, those multifamily projects, mitigating their transportation impact. We'll also have a new roundabout, and so all this is this summer, so get ready for crazy traffic. Also on North Bend Way at Downing, so right there in front of the QFC, another roundabout.
We'll approve that contract on Tuesday.
Yeah. Let's see what else. Snoqualmie Valley Trail crossing. So this is one of the worst crossings on the whole trail there, where it comes at a really strange askew angle, and you're in this big kind of no man's land of where should I cross and what's going on. So as a part of this project, they've got some requirements to actually put a signalize, at least to push the button and it flashes, intersection crossing there to improve that. So you'll see that coming this summer. Park and trail projects. So we also have a lot of park projects that are going to be breaking ground this summer. As you're aware, the bond from the Sideview Metropolitan Park District passed. And so there's a number of things that are being lined up by the coordinated by both the park district and the city for that. So Tollgate Farm and Meadowbrook Farm connectors, these are just about done. One of them connects from Meadowbrook Farm along Rivery Creek over to the Snoqualmie Valley Trail. Another the one which is now actually complete from Meadowbrook Farm back through what's called the Dyke Road Fields across the bridge to the trail at the golf course. Those are in place, and we've got a kickoff event coming up, I believe it's June 21st, that we're going to be doing groundbreaking for that. Sideview Metropolitan Park District is going to be installing a cricket field at Tollier Farm Park this summer.
Can I just say that's so cool?
Yeah, it's a huge, actually, unmet need regionally. So we'll likely see cricket tournaments and things coming to the city that then bring revenue for people wanting to stay in hotels and eat in restaurants. So that's an exciting project.
Needed a British accent, Rob.
Well, I'm looking for new ways to nap.
Yeah. South Fork Snohomie River Levee Trail. We're starting a planning process. This is not a project on the ground yet, but I just want to let you know because it's kind of an exciting process getting started. For the Parks Commission and our council, actually the work study coming up on Tuesday, we're going to be starting a process to consider levee improvements along the South Fork Snohomie in the downtown area. And the idea is eventually to have a nice loop that goes along the levees, and you can make your way back through the Snohomie Valley Trail in downtown. Have something that is really of interest along the shoreline for downtown, both for downtown merchants and for just residents. So we may eventually come back to you guys with some suggestions for rezones to enable more shoreline-related retail and commercial uses.
North or south side?
That's to be considered. At this point, what tends to make more sense is on the what we call the right bank as you're going downstream. That has a lot more access to things like the beach here. It's built up
connect
more.
Up, I'm assuming, to the Sideview Park
yes.
property that's
yeah, back
that
there
corner.
Yeah, okay. Shamrock Park. That's going to require a lot of process, though, because there's a lot of private property in there that we have to seek easements or acquisitions for. So a lot of process ahead on that, but it's... We've heard loud and clear from the public that that is a high priority. They want to see that happen, so we want to get that process started. Cascade Golf Course. So you've probably heard that we've purchased this property largely for water mitigation. There's some water rights that benefit the city. But Sideview Metropolitan Park District is going to be developing that park, probably not this year, but in the near future. Tourism Park has got a number of improvements coming this summer. Yeah, or actually, just the lighting this summer. They're going to be lighting the skate park. And then also coming next year, lighting the bike park. Next year, they're going to be redeveloping the entire skate park with a much larger facility. So that's funded in the bond, and it's happening. A few trails to note. We're going to be building trail from the roundabout along the old Tanner railroad right away through to the new public or the new city hall entrance, and then also a trail from Tollgate Farm Park to the downtown within the 202 corridor. Let's see what else. Sideview is going to be working on a major remodel of the depot and William H. Taylor Park. We're going to be cleaning that up with some re-landscaping and downtown more. And then finally, a little bit longer term, but Tollgate Farm, farmstead improvements. So Sideview is going to be planning a lot of improvements out there with the property as a whole to do some kind of community supported agriculture type of things. And then also building a reconstructed barn. So if you know the history of the barn there was an enormous barn at one point. They're going to build something not quite to that scale, but that can serve as both a true barn for agricultural uses and also something that can serve as a community facility as well. And they'll be providing a washing station for small-scale agricultural uses and some additional parking and opening up the farmhouse. So the farmhouse has been under restoration. They're going to be working on the next big phase of it, the interior, this summer. So a lot happening in North Bend.
Yeah, exciting time.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike. All right, well, that wraps up the formal agenda before we entertain a motion to adjourn. Is there anybody that has any anything for the good of the order?
I have a question.
Sure.
Is there a map that indicates what the speed limit is for all the roads in town?
Not that I know of. I know we've provided in our developed area in our municipal code that there's speed limits. It's like 25 miles per hour unless otherwise posted, and it assigns certain speed limits to certain streets.
Okay. Is mostly downtown 25 miles per hour?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then the council's going to be considering lowering the speed limit on certain segments of North Bend Way as some of these projects happen.
Okay.
For construction or permanently?
Permanently.
And with that, how far do you think that'll go out?
Particularly out towards that Tanner Trail crossing, we're going to be lowering the speed limit to 40, I believe, on that entire segment. Just there's so much going on there with new intersections, new driveways, the roundabouts, the crossing. It's 50 miles an hour is really just too fast for all that.
People do 40 anyway. Till 140.
Okay.
Anything else?
This might not be the right time to ask it, but I'm curious about the water treatment, the status. I know that they were putting a moratorium on that.
The sewer treatment?
Yeah, the sewers.
Yeah, so there's a number of improvements necessary to our wastewater treatment plant, and so until those are in place, the council is considering the contracts for those improvements right now, but until those are in place, we have under what we have, what we call our concurrency regulations, you can't approve a development unless you show that there is capacity for each of our facilities, including wastewater.
Mm-hmm.
So until we have those improvements, the concurrency regulations don't allow us at this point to approve additional residential development, except for one-off single families.
No, that doesn't apply to any of the ones you were talking about, though, because those are
already... No, those have already had their capacity. So,
and so what does the city of North Bend have to do to get that done?
Yeah, specific improvements at the treatment plant, and
yeah.
I'm definitely not the expert on what those look like, but the council's been working on those. And
so it's like funding or something like that?
Funding is going to be, if I may, funding is going to be the biggest issue. That's going to be, I think, the next thing that hits council is seeking mm-hmm. funding for that. There's the phase one improvements to the wastewater treatment plant going on now, but phase two are the ones that will add capacity. And so before really anything gets done, funding will be the first bit of it. And we've seen staff kind of piecing together money where they can get it. I think we just, council just authorized a loan from the state for those phase two improvements. But I think additional bonding would be necessary as well.
Okay. And is there like a timeline on that?
I think they're hoping to get to get all of that done this summer, to at least get the contract let this summer, but that may be wishful thinking. I could be wrong. I hope it's sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Okay. Just curious.
Yeah, good questions. Good information. Mike, Eileen, thank you very much for the great presentations and the information tonight. Welcome to our new commissioners, Susan and Heather. I think we're wrapped up on the agenda. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved. Second.
Motion to adjourn by Commissioner Greenberg and seconded by Commissioner McFarland. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Meeting is adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Look over.